Go. Head On with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! Looky here, it's Friday, almost time to go home. This is The Horn, I'm Bob Kincaid. Friday on the front porch, last one for a while from here in Washington, D.C., the headquarters of the Appalachian Communities Health Emergency Campaign. It's been a long 2 weeks, almost 2 weeks. I'll be home in time to crank Moore and Monday up from the home studios there at the fabulous mansion back in almost level West Bicod, Virginia. And glad I will be to get home. Glad indeed. Sorry about yesterday, but the fact of the matter is we were, my colleagues and I, were in meetings all day long and didn't stumble back here into the headquarters until about 7 o'clock or so. So you get the idea. It's been a good trip. It's been a successful trip. We are, of course, working on getting the AIC Act introduced in the Senate. Haven't gotten there yet, but close, I think. I think we're closer. Well, certainly closer than we were before we started work. That's the whole point of this exercise is, you cannot win if you do not play. But it'll be nice to be hitting the road for home. Let's see. You'll get a kick out of this. Some people disapprove, but just on a lark the other day, for the Wednesday drawing, I picked up a Powerball ticket. I'm gonna read you my numbers. And you'll get a sense for why I sometimes feel just snake bit. The winning numbers for the July 24th drawing were 29, 40, 44, and 54. I'm sorry, 9, 29, 40, 44, and 54. My numbers were 9, 28, 39, 43, and 53. Literally a day late and a dollar short. Short by one on every number. You know, this goes all the way back to high school when I missed out on being a national merit semifinalist by 1 point. Yeah, miss is as good as a mile, right? But anyway, every now and then, just, I'll do something. Oh, well. God. So there's that. But anyway, heading home. And we head home, of course, moving toward the end of July, and we move toward the end of July with a significant deficit on our hands. Many thanks to those of you who have kept the deficit from being any worse than it already is. Shortfall, deficit, whatever word we choose. But any way you slice it, we're about $800 short now. And I've got a note here from Paul in Parts Unknown. You get away from the microphone for one day and suddenly you can't enunciate anymore. Well, then again, I've been tripping over my tonsils for years. Paul in Parts Unknown, who writes, "Dear Bob, and by extension, dear everybody, sorry I've been out of touch. I've been working hard here in Parts Unknown and have been taking a month off from politics. I try to take a month off or so from the news every year to get some perspective and focus on other things. It really is a good idea. If I don't, I start feeling like I need to pull out the harikari knife, a la John Belushi's samurai dry cleaner, or a samurai delicatessen from the old days of Saturday Night Live, and at each bad or insane news story. And, you know, Paul, there's a lot of those, and got a bunch of them in the stack this evening, as a matter of fact. I plugged back in after the 4th of July, and boy, it just keeps getting weirder. I also haven't been contributing much to the horn due to old bill collectors sniffing out the fact that I have a job for the first time in 4 years, so I've been paying those off. That's always a good idea, more than understandable. I kicked in what I could due to some overtime at work, but I don't have enough for the usual challenge. However, I thought about getting creative again. That's always good. Due to helping out a charity and giving a wedding gift to a friend who requested my almonds, I have some extra I can send out for challenges. I could only send one as a challenge and send the other to the Kincaid Mansion, but with Bob in D.C. so much, if they arrived at the Kincaid Mansion, I doubt Bob would get any unless he was there on the day they arrived. So two tins of almonds for challenges. And, you know, Paul, to be quite honest, that would obtain even if I were there and even if I went to the mailbox. Those almonds arrive, and you can actually hear the swooping sounds as various members of the family converge upon them. So I think your choice is well made. For those of you, Paul in Parts Unknown writes, for those of you who don't know or remember, during the holiday season, I make these wonderful almonds, and they are. They're bought at Costco, a good union-supporting company, and then I blanch them, skin them by hand, and roast them in sea salt and olive oil. They're simply delicious and elegantly simple. They are all natural and gluten-free. Vegan-friendly. I usually make them only during the holidays. If I didn't, I'd be making them all the time. I like to call them Paulmans. Get it? Paul from Parts Unknown? Almonds? Paul's Almonds? Paulmans? I'm so clever sometimes. But I had a friend, Paul continues, who was insistent about what he wanted as a wedding present, and once word got out that I was making some, a couple more requests came that I obliged, but I'd made too much, so I have two tins of these wonderful almonds up for bids to any two members of the Horn Family Commune that wish to donate $40 or more for these almonds. Send your emails or IMs to Bob, and he'll get the addresses to me, and I'll email them out to you. I'm having some trouble locating non-Christmas tins in stores I can use to package them in. I have some leftover tins from the holidays I can use. I hope that's okay. That'll be fine. We can, well, like your subject line says, Paul, Christmas in July challenge. The challenge is open until the end of the month, but supplies are limited and go fast, so let Bob know if you're in. Hopefully we'll get this taken care of this evening. You send me your address and your, you send me your address via email. I'll transfer it to Paul from Parts Unknown, and we will go from there. So the deal, as Paul has put it together, is contributions of $40 or more. There are two tins up for grabs. Contributions of $40 or more. You send me your traditional mail address. I'll provide it to Paul, and then you, in a matter of days, will be munching away on one of the most delightful, healthiest, enjoyable snacks that, well, I've had in a very long time. If he ever decides to, I think Paul could go into business with these, and I really like the idea of marketing them as Paulmans. Paulmonds, Paulmans. Now, on to another topic, Paul says. I'm about 2 weeks behind on podcasts, so this might be old news, but I wish to cast some aspersions on Mr. Gohmert's asparagus. This is always good. You know, the asparagus thing is, it's going to stick to Louie, isn't it? Don't you think? The cast aspersions on my asparagus? Yeah. Just like cantaloupes are apparently sticking to Steve King. I don't know why anybody would be offended. If anybody should be offended, it'd be so damn drug dealers. Man, when even John Boehner and Eric Cantor have to come out and say that you're disgusting, well, you know, you finally really found the sub-basement to the sub-basement to the sub-basement into the cesspit at the bottom of the Republican pool, haven't you? Yeah. So Paul says, I wish to cast some aspersions on Mr. Gohmert's asparagus. I was listening to that podcast about his story with the person on food stamps buying crab legs and using that to justify cutting SNAP, the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program, otherwise known as food stamps once upon a time, and it got me very upset, Paul says. The reason being is that it hits close to home. So let me tell another story about SNAP that doesn't involve crab legs, but I assure you it's more real than these so-called welfare queens that are out there in the imaginations of the right wing. One of the more awesome things that has happened to me out here in parts unknown is that I have a cousin out here that I had never met before in my life. When my family found out I was moving out here, they said, I think you have a cousin who lives out there too. We connected and we get along great. She's a single mother of two wonderful children, and I've been becoming more and more a part of the family as Uncle Paul. My cousin is a very nice lady in a heck of a bind. Her ex-husband had a midlife crisis that involved falling in love with another woman and skipping out on his family geographically and financially. Now, 2 years later, she's a single mom back in school to get her degree while trying to keep a roof over her family's head and food on the table. She gets SNAP to help her with this, and I can assure you it is not enough. She can't go to fast food places or buy cheap food because her little 8-year-old boy has severe food allergies to nuts and soy, so finding him food that won't kill him takes time and is usually more expensive. She also takes food donations from her local church and leftover food at her children's daycare center to make food ends meet. I would help her out more, but she's too proud to accept it. She wants to make it clear that I am not a part of the family due to the money I have, but for who I am. Don't get me wrong, I sneak in the occasional soy-free pizza, which is made by a local place here in town, but is double to triple the price of normal Papa John's pizza, or cook a soy and nut-free meal for dinner that I bring over to their place when it's my turn to make dinner for the family, making sure there will be plenty of leftovers. But my cousin is very careful and draws clear lines about me not doing too much. To my mind, Bob, this is a typical SNAP recipient, trying to scrape by, feeding their family, going to whomever and wherever they can for more food, because SNAP is not enough, and too proud to be more dependent on others than is absolutely necessary. And Mr. Gohmert wants to make it harder for people like my cousin to feed her children. Well, no, let's correct the record there, Paul. He doesn't want to make it harder for your cousin to feed her children. He wants to make it impossible for your cousin to feed her children. Louis Gohmert has the ethics and more, and let's see, he was comparing human beings the other day to the lesser prairie chicken and the snail darter. Well, Louis Gohmert has roughly the same ethics and morals as a cobra. The same sense of social responsibility as a dung beetle. They actually may have more social responsibility. Paul continues, it just burns me up inside. She's barely hanging on as it is. These jerks are so disconnected from reality, it amazes me. The level of disconnection rivals a Zen master's ability to meditate so deeply that they can't feel you beating them with a stick. The only thing that calmed me down, Paul says, was reaching the comic epiphany that these teabaggers, remember the T in teabagger stands for Taliban equivalent American, These teabaggers are a more dangerous version of Steve Martin's The Jerk. That scene where he's at the gas station and someone's trying to kill him with a rifle and he concludes that someone must be angry at the oil cans. People are starving in America. You can call it food insecurity if you want to, but 1 in 4 children in America are going hungry, and The Jerk's conclusion is to give them less food because they're buying too many crab legs. Well, that's all from Parts Unknown. Good luck in D.C. Signed, Paul, from Parts Unknown. Thank you, Paul. Thank you for the kind offer of the challenge, the wonderful snacking almonds. I think Michael got a tin of them last time, and I think he can testify to the fact that they are in fact de-dang-licious. And by the way, Paul has a closes with a question. He says, my representative is one of the original co-signers to the AIC Act. Is it productive to call the office or a representative that has already signed on and thank them for doing so? Paul, that's an excellent question. And in point of fact, it is a good idea. Because in thanking them for being a part of this effort to solve the abject horrors that beset Appalachia, you can perhaps leverage some goodwill. For instance, well, I'm not sure just exactly which member of the House Paul is talking about. Perhaps Pete DeFazio. I don't know. I don't know. But you can always, in thanking them, you can say, and would you encourage your colleague, fill in the blank, to join in as well? And sometimes they will. So that's a very good idea. And thank you for asking. We've been incredibly busy. I can't even begin to tell you all the offices we have been. It's been an absolute flurry this week. And I simply ask you to contact your senators now. You know, we were talking to members of Congress for a very long time. This time, contact your senators and ask them, tell them you want a companion bill to the AIC Act introduced in the Senate, and you want hearings. For instance, Jude, our dear friend Jude, writes in, and she says, I'll be involved in Representative Kilmer's telephone town hall next Wednesday, and I will bring his attention again to the AIC Act, and I will continue to be an active proponent for its passage. And it is this kind of persistence that will eventually get the bills passed and get them signed into law. So thank you. Thank you very much. Thank you, Jude. So that's just a note for purposes of beginning the program. It is Friday on the front porch, and that means that we're going to be all over the place. Later on in the program, I do have a technical note for you. I don't know why, but Agnes tells me the phones back in the home studio are effed, so that means we are limited to Skype this evening. If you want to get involved with the program, and here, let me just, for the heck of it, check and double check that stuff is working the way it's supposed to work. And go. Well, damn. Well, maybe we don't have Skype either. My God, this. And let me update you. Let me update you on some technical stuff. Thank you very kindly, Jeremy. He says, Jeremy in Vermont says, I just tuned in, Bob, using TuneIn on my smartphone. All sounds well on this end. There's a small buzz in the background, but that's always there while you're on the road. That's actually my poor little overheated brain. No, I don't know what it is, but I apologize for it. So it looks like we don't have Skype, which means that it looks like I'm going to be filibobstering for a while. Emails will help. But no, the other night I got disgusted and said I'm gonna get busy with this stuff related to trying to get some technical support. Well, we went back and forth, and I ran a bunch of diagnostics. And don't you love it when you contact tech support and their automatic response is, something's wrong with your stuff, not our stuff. Well, let's see. Jan's trying to reach the program. Hold on here. Or maybe, okay, no. Yeah, it didn't quite work out. Thanks for trying, Jan. Anyway, so I talked to tech support and ran a bunch of diagnostics and latency checks and page files, and oh, my God. And I got this report back from them saying, well, gosh, it looks like you've overclocked your CPU. Now, the real computer geniuses out there can answer this question for me, because I am not a real computer genius, and I'm damn sure don't play one on the radio. I built this computer. I'm competent enough to build a computer. I built this computer. It has an AMD quad-core Phenom in it, one of the earlier versions. And yes, it was one of the AMD quad-core black editions, which meant it was totally unlocked. But here's where it gets interesting. They said, the tech support people said, that the reason we've had all this distorted audio and dropouts and blah, 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 is because the CPU is overclocked. Way, way, way back when the amazing Peter Godbold was teaching me to do all this stuff, he explained what overclocking was, and he forever forbade me. And when Peter Godbold would tell me, no, Bob, bad, bad thing, Bob not do, bad, I took it to heart. So I have never, ever overclocked a CPU intentionally. And I'm pretty sure I haven't unintentionally overclocked it either. So I guess here's my question. Is it possible for a CPU to overclock itself? I'm darned if I know. I'm absolutely licked. So, you know, just for your consideration. Yeah, see, that's what I thought, Jeremy. Jeremy telling me overclocking is a bad idea, and that's really only done from the system BIOS. You have to do that manually. Yeah, see, so how could this thing, I mean, I built this thing from jump, from brand new. Yeah, and see, there's Isaac telling me, no, you can't accidentally overclock a CPU, and a CPU can't overclock itself. So go figure. Well, the ultimate outcome of this is that, you know, we have no Skype tonight. Damn. Makes me wonder if we've got any music tonight. No telling. Yeah, Marty with the observation, Peter Godbold is wise. Oh, yes, Peter Godbold is wise. Peter Godbold knows, like, individual packets by name. Bill, Harriet, you know, Junie, things like that. So there's that. But anyway, it's about 24 minutes past the hour, and I'll go as long as I possibly can, as long as this device that I will ever so happily put back in its road case and take back to West by God, Virginia with me, and maybe have time to sit down and sort some of this out. Annoying. It doesn't look like I'm going to be back in D.C. for a while. Congress is taking August off, and, you know, the way the heat here and the humidity, I don't blame Congress. course, historically, Congress took August off and the summer off, frankly, because living here in the summer could cause you to stop living. No, really, this place, Washington, D.C., is built on a swamp. The original version of government waste, fraud, and abuse. It was built on a swamp, and in the summer months, it would become so hot, so humid, so muggy, that the mosquitoes would become so prolifically reproductive that if you stuck around here, you could very well wind up with an ugly, ugly, and quite often terminal case of malaria and or yellow fever. So you bugged out. One of these days when I'm here, I'm going to go up to Soldier's Home and see where Lincoln went to try to get out of the heat and away from the nastiness that was the White House back in the day. But it gets really hot and nasty. So that's the origins of Congress pretty much taking the time off. Let's see here. Let me check things out. Okay. All right, so anyway, Congress is taking off for August, and I won't be back. But from a program note standpoint, I wanted to let you know that it looks like I'm going to be doing a pretty fair amount of traveling during September. So September's looking like it's going to be a bit of a dodgy schedule. And then October, we may very well be back here for weeks and weeks and weeks on end, because October is the last month in which this Congress, in this session of this Congress, is going to be busy, 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 busy. So we'll probably be back working that. They'll be here in session for four solid weeks. There's one more week of this latest flurry of activity, but I'm going on home. I'm licked. I'm beat. I'm exhausted. And I miss my wife and my family more than I can probably properly or explain. I just do. Waggy in the chat room. Well, Stockton Larry, tech talk on Friday. Isn't that always the way? Waggy says, food porn, tech talk. This is some geeky show, huh? Sparky said, I thought it was nut porn. Oh, we were doing that a few minutes ago. And just a reminder, yeah, there are two tins for the modest sum of a contribution of $40 or more. There are two tins of absolutely magnificent almonds that are available from Paul in Parts Unknown, and they're there. Just shoot me a note. The first two get them. Shoot me a note, bobkincaid@gmail.com. Give me your traditional overland mail delivery address, and we'll make it all work for you, and you can do the contribution through PayPal and everything else. Jan dialed in. Let's see if this works. Are you there, Jan? Afraid not. So, I'm sorry. If I reboot this thing, we may get it working again later in the program. I won't do that reboot until the top of the hour or so. But my goodness gracious, it is Friday on the front porch, and the lovely thing about Friday on the front porch is that we can discuss all manner of goofy, crazy stuff, with the limited exception of a couple of topics that are verboten. You know, we've talked in the past about how there are certain things you don't do or say when you're passing through airport security. you don't talk about certain things. You just don't, because it makes them very nervous. Well, we've got a new addition to the list. And it is something that it actually comes from a photograph that someone at the Transportation Security Administration tweeted. And it comes out of LaGuardia Airport from a week ago. First of all, I don't fully comprehend the fashion concept of high heels, the women's fashion concept of high heels. I mean, once upon a time, and I was actually a teenager for this, there was a fad toward, like, platform shoes for men during the disco era. I remember it. But I don't understand, and I especially don't understand the itsy-bitsy, teeny-pointy little pencil diameter stiletto heels. They can be said by some to be just to look just sexy as hell, but they've got to be painful to wear, right? I mean, the women in the Horn family commune can educate me on this. Are they painful to wear, or, you know, whatever? And they strike me as a sort of, well, it's, they strike me as being oppressive. But this is over the top. I am looking at a photograph, I kid you not, of a pair of what appear to be black patent leather high heel pumps, the heels of which, I'm not kidding, are shaped like little pistols. Real little semi-automatic pistols. Maybe it'd be a 380 caliber or so. A woman, presumably with a functioning brain, actually wore these stiletto heels, and why you would wear stiletto heels to go flying is beyond me, because it's hard enough walking up and down those damned aisles of those cramped-ass little airplanes in the first place. She actually wore these black patent stiletto pumps with heels shaped like realistic firearms. You reckon she bought them on the NRA website or something, or maybe at a gun show? And at LaGuardia Airport, they took the shoes away from her. Now, let's be clear. These were not working firearms. They weren't even firearms that had been rendered inoperative. They were merely facsimiles. The heels looked like pistols. They asked her to, the TSA asked her to take them off and go through security barefoot. You know, you got to take your shoes off at security. And she did. And the TSA seized the shoes. And later tweeted also what not to wear at hashtag LGA checkpoint. Can anybody explain this to me? Any portion of the process whereby these shoes go into the stream of commerce. Okay, you're going to a costume party and you want to go as a 1920s gangster gun mall. All right, I got that. Can we take the next step and say, why do you wear them to get on a plane? Because I can't fathom it. I can't fathom the mindset that says, well, it's time to go to LaGuardia and get on the airplane. And, you know, I think I'm going to wear my high-heeled patent leather pumps with heels that look like firearms that will make security personnel nervous as hell. I really would. You know, they only took a picture of the shoes. I'd like to have a picture of the person who was wearing the shoes, not for any prurient interest or anything. I just, you know, it's kind of like how I want to drive through Steve King's congressional district and just look at people and say, did you vote for him? Really? This is one of those moments where you want to look at the, you want to look at the wearer of the shoes and what were you thinking? And who's the design genius? Jimmy Choo? Manolo Blahnik? Beats me. But really, as if airport security and the entire flying experience were not noxious enough, you've got a shoe designer making it more interesting. It beats me. Just beats me. Oh, note coming in from Randy in PA. And thank you, Randy, for helping out in the last 24 hours. Thank you very kindly. He says, well, actually, it is possible for a CPU to overclock itself. He says, my brother's PC has a variable speed depending on ambient conditions, including ambient temperature. The hotter the ambient temperature, the slower the speed. Check the speed, usually in megahertz or gigahertz, periodically, and see if it varies. Some of the older 1990s PC and operating systems had a hardware turbo button on them, which could conceivably overclock the CPU. No such thing here. I mean, this is not an ancient CPU, but it is by no means, you know, it's not exactly it's not a Trash 80 or a Commodore 64 either. So, who knows? Then again, I'm the guy who gets the five numbers for Powerball, one number off of every number. Anything, and I do mean anything, is possible. I did find a no small number of interesting stories out there for our Friday on the front porch, by the way. Apparently, did you see this? Some campgrounds in the Angeles National Forest have been closed for at least a week. No, this time it's not austerity. This time it's not sequestration. Campgrounds in the Angeles National Forest near L.A. have been closed, shut down, because a squirrel there tested positive for plague. Plague! You know, the thing that wiped out a third of the Earth's population back in the 14th century. Not a joke. Plague. Any of the animal science, biology, zoology types want to explain to me how a squirrel in the Angeles National Forest turns up positive for plague? And of course, the officials associated with the closure and everything, they were very careful to indicate that no humans had tested positive for it. There was nothing to indicate that there was a threat to the human population, and there have only been four cases of plague in L.A. since 1984, and none of them were fatal anyway. Only four cases in L.A. in 29 years of plague. Plague. I don't want to put too fine a point on it. Nor do I wish to create a hysteria or panic or anything like that. Plague. Did I mention it was plague? Maybe it's less of a big deal than I think it is. Maybe there's just oodles of squirrels around, running around out there with plague. Huh. Waggy pointing out plague has been endemic to the southwestern United States about forever. Larry wanting to know, is that the blah plague? The news story I read said, of course, this is the same plague that wiped out Europe during the blah, 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 blah. So, yeah, I think it is bubonic plague. Thank you, Lottie. Yersinia pestis, formerly Pasteurella pestis, is a type of bacterium. It is believed to have been responsible for plagues of the early 1300s. More accurately, it is a gram-negative, rod-shaped coccobacillus. It is a facultative anaerobe that can infect humans and other animals. Sparky merely says, we're trying to get rid of our ground squirrels. With plague? So we got that. Which is weird. But we're going to, no, we've got a, oh my God, we've got a ton of stuff to get into this evening. We've got a nasty, you'd call it sexual harassment, only not really, story. All kinds of, and then the Halliburton story, you know, you've got this, right? You know Halliburton's been busted for destroying evidence, which some would call, oh, I don't know, obstruction of justice. Destroying evidence in the Deepwater Horizon disaster. They destroyed evidence, and it was evidence that tended to make it more likely than not that they were largely at fault. Yeah, there's that. There's potential here to be rather the busy little evening. Doesn't that just make you crazy, though? I mean, dang it, 1 minute we were playing the intro for the program, and the next minute, nothing. I don't mind being bested by technology, but I do rather object to having it kick my ass arbitrarily. Oh, and we've got a story from that haven of freedom and tolerance, Russia. That'll be interesting. The story of, oh Jesus, no, I can't. No, there are two stories that are just not going to get mentioned on this program for fear of hate mail. Not going to do it. Not going to do it. Because I like having people actually join in and create the conversation and having people get disgusted and say, done here. Not going to do it. Not going to do it. So I tell you what, we're going to take a break. It's a quarter to seven here in the Eastern time zone, about 45 minutes into the program. We're going to take a break, and I, by God, am going to reboot this whole shooting match and see if we can't get audio back. Because, you know, if you guys want to reach the program via Skype, I want you to be able to do so. so that, because it's not that I can't fill a Bobster, it's that I don't like to, because I feel like I'm talking at people, not with people. And I've never envisioned myself as being someone who was the guy who was born to deliver the authoritarian talking points and the instructions for which everyone is simply sitting around yearning. I ain't that guy. So you will see me disappearing from Skype in a moment. And then you will see me disappearing from the chat room. And that'll, yeah, so that's that. Can't play you any bumper music. Not that you were actually sitting around yearning for that or anything. But we will rejoin in a matter of minutes after I have rebooted this monstrosity. And we will go from there. Maybe we'll even be able to take a call via Skype. And wouldn't that just be too cool? So stand by. We'll be right back. I'm Bob Kincaid. This is The Horn. And remember, two tins of awesome almonds for snacking in the golden rays of August sun. Two tins, and they're generous tins too. I mean, Paul from Parts Unknown doesn't slack on these palmons. I mean, they're awesome. $40 contribution for each tin, at least. You know, if you want to contribute 50, that would be awesome, because we're in a hole that's about $900 deep right now. And it would be sincerely appreciated. And this time, for your contribution, you actually get to enjoy something. And it's nice when there's a little swag out there. And we really appreciate Paul putting forward these Palmans for your delectation. So, it's on the table. It's there for you if you want it. This is The Horn. We'll be back. Well, it is a maddeningly time-consuming problem sorting this kind of stuff out, but for the moment at least, we've got Skype back, so if you want to get involved with the program via Skype, hi, I'm Bob Kincaid, we're back, this is The Horn, Friday on the front porch, and we audio things are working for as long as this device wishes to let it continue to work, so if you want to get involved in the program by way of, you know, participating in conversation radio, which this is, you are more than welcome to do so. Otherwise, Friday on the front porch, Philibobster will continue. And I'm heading back into the chat room. And then we'll get after the stories again, because there's some real screamers out there and some funnies and some, but you know, it's the usual mix. Yay, back in the chat room. Okay. And hither. And thither. One of the tins of Palmans. We're working on marketing here for Paul and Parts Unknown. One of the tins of Palmans has been claimed. Thank you, Jude. And it is much appreciated. So there's one more out there available, and I will let Paul know as soon as one to go. And, God, these are delightful treats. Now, where were we? Oh, yeah. We're still here. It's still, probably the most fascinating science story I've seen in a while did scientists have implanted false memories in the brain of a mouse? Well, here's how it happened. Several mice were placed in a chamber glowing with reddish light and allowed to explore. The next day, they were placed in a second chamber and given a... I know it's for science, but somehow there's part of me that just goes, what? No, wrong. The next day, they were placed in a second chamber and given electric shocks on their feet to encode a fear response. Scientists also shone light into their brains, activating memories of the first chamber. When the mice were placed back in the first chamber, they froze, expecting shocks that never came. We call this incepting, or implanting false memories in a mouse brain. Susumu Tonegawa and a team of MIT researchers, Nobel laureate Susumu Tonegawa, told the journal Science. Science was the journal that published this particular research. And Susumu Tonegawa went on and said that humans are very imaginative animals, and independent of what is happening around you in the outside world, humans constantly have mental internal activity in the brain. So just like our mouse, it is quite possible we can associate what we happen to have in our mind with bad or good, high-variance, ongoing events. In other words, there could be a false association of what you have in your mind rather than what is happening to you. The particular technology is called optogenetics, and individual cells were manipulated in the mouse hippocampus, the part of the brain that's responsible for memory formation, to make them responsive to light. You know, years ago, when I was considerably younger, I thought I would see stories like, wow, that's fascinating. Now I'm not so sure I'm fascinated so much as horrified. Because when you see technology like this develop, and correct me if I'm wrong, I mean, feel free to disagree. Look, here's where my mind goes. I see research like this, and I immediately think that somewhere at Booz Hamilton or some other sleazy, blood-sodden defense contractor, that there is somebody that, hey, you know what we could do? Oh, this would be so cool if we could do this to people. You know, say at Guantanamo, you know, our concentration camp there, our death camp. This could be real handy for the hunger strikers, couldn't it? Tonegawa said that by showing how false memory and genuine memory are based on almost identical brain mechanisms, the study may help prevent future cases of wrongful conviction. We hope our future findings along this line will further alert legislatures and legal experts how unreliable memory can be. And the story that I'm reading from Salon points to the case of Troy Davis. You remember Troy Davis. He was probably not guilty, and the state of Georgistan killed him anyway. And it's thought that the eyewitness, so-called eyewitness identifications were faulty. So that's the good and noble purpose to which they wish to put this technology to work. And me, just knowing the nature of empire and the nature of the way some of our thinking in this country goes, no, it's easy for me to say, oh, yeah, somewhere, yeah, down in the bowels of Booz Hamilton, or some other outfit that, lo and behold, there's somebody who just can't wait to use this on some brown person to make America safer, right? Hey, Jeremy is with us on the Skype line, Bob Kincaid Horn, calling from Vermont. Hey, Jeremy.
Hey, Bob.
How are you?
You're loud and clear here, so things are working good again, I guess.
Until the ghost in the machine takes a different attitude.
I still think the CPU clock speed being overdone, I don't think that's anything you did, and I've heard of what that guy was talking about, some that had a toggle switch where you could make it go faster. Some people know what they're doing with the clock speed. They use it for gaming. They can up it to get the graphics performance better, but it's really bad. It will destroy your computer real quick if you're not careful with it. So that being said, I don't think you did it. I think they probably got the wrong idea when they told you whatever they were doing. It just doesn't sound reasonable. If you haven't messed with it in the BIOS, it doesn't happen.
But I think I am going to go into the BIOS and find it and just take a look and see if it is. But
I was going to say, I guarantee you when you click on that BIOS section, if you make any changes, it'll pop up a warning message saying, are you sure you want to do this? And it'll redundantly ask you a couple of times because that's how bad an idea it is.
Oh, I know. And the other side of this that I haven't brought up yet in this ongoing tech conversation is this. I've had these same effects, and anybody who's listened to me on the road knows I've had these same effects with about four different computers.
Right, and I've heard at least a few of them.
Yeah, and I mean, this particular computer is, like I say, an AMD quad-core Phenom. The other two are Core i7 laptops. So, there you go.
I blame it on Windows 8, but you're not using Windows 8 anymore.
No.
Because I've yet to see a place where you can enter the BIOS through Windows 8, but that's a whole different issue. What I wanted to talk about a couple things. One, with this whole Halliburton revelation, which we all knew, I mean, I think it's deeper than what they said. I almost think I heard it as they said they got rid of the oil, and in fact, the oil's still there, and they're starting to admit that. I could have sworn I heard that in a news brief about the Halliburton thing. Maybe I heard wrong, but I definitely heard they're pleading guilty to it.
And you know what the guilty plea is going to cost them?
Billions, but it's Trump change to them.
No. The fine for the guilty plea, Jeremy, is $200,000.
What? Okay, well, we'll come back to them for a second. Remember, 20 years ago, there was a small spill in Valdez, Alaska?
Yeah, just a little, right.
They haven't paid a goddamn red cent for that yet, and they were fined like $20 million for that cleanup.
Right.
It's 20 years ongoing.
Yeah, and you may recall that that the Supreme Court a couple of years ago decided that the lower courts were being way too mean to poor little Exxon, and they slashed the punitive damages.
I have a friend, the same friend for the Edward Snowden thing I was talking about, who was in the Coast Guard for 20 years. He was stationed in Valdez, Alaska. He was there up until the last 15 years. And he said that until the day he left Valdez, Alaska, there was still tar barrels rolling onto the shore.
Oh, I have no doubt.
And he said that place is pretty much a wasteland. It won't recover in anyone's lifetime that you can think of, including probably your grandkids. It won't happen. Because they did the same thing back then. They sunk it with those same stinking chemicals, so it's still there on the bottom of the ocean.
Yeah, where things that people like that live on the bottom of the ocean, live at the bottom of the ocean, live.
Essentially.
Shrimp, oysters,
so you have
crabs.
To wonder if Halliburton's responsible for this. Do they have any part in this Louisiana explosion that just happened, which almost no mainstream media covered? All they cared about was that goddamn baby.
See, now you just cheated. You mentioned the GD baby. We're trying to keep this a baby free program. But I'll let you pass once, Jeremy.
Well, like you said, didn't we have a dust up a few hundred years ago, so we didn't have to listen to what they were saying or something like that?
And you know what? I it just so happened that I was walking through, I think, the basement of the Russell Senate Office Building, which is the oldest of the three Senate Office Buildings. And there was a display there, being as how next year will be the 200th anniversary of it, there was a display there of all about how our friends from England in 1814 came over and burnt our new Capitol building pretty near to the ground.
Yeah, most and came damn close to taking us back, too. Very close.
Yes, yes.
By a string, they didn't get us back.
And
it was pure luck. They came in much greater numbers the second time.
And as I stood there, I was looking at a watercolor that was painted by a person who saw it at the time. Remember, Washington City was, well, it was no pleasant place to be in 1814 or 1812 or 1810 or 18 pretty much any time until up after the Lincoln administration when America discovered the wonders of debt.
And if I recall correctly, early 1800s, around that same time, is when they decided to go to Afghanistan and get their asses kicked there, too.
Oh, the British?
Yeah, the British.
I'm not sure. It may be further up into the 19th century, but it's always fun to go and watch Sean Connery and Michael Caine in The Man Who Would Be King. It's a magnificent film.
That centers out
on some of that. If you've never seen it, you should. But anyway, so I was standing there, Jeremy. I was looking at this watercolor that somebody had come had stood there and painted after the British had burned the Capitol. And back then, of course, it wouldn't have the two new wings for the Senate and the House until the mid 1850s. The dome wasn't completed, but it was absolutely gutted. I mean, they went through, the British troops went through and used the desks to feed the fire. No kidding. And it just so happens that, you know, not that I'm going to go running off to my Sons of the American Revolution or whatever meeting, but it just so happens that I have ancestors who were on the right, what we perceive to be the right side of both the Revolution and the War of 1812. I mean, we can go back and find the records have been found of this ancestor of mine. So I was sitting there looking at this watercolor, and I was thinking, and it dawned, and then I remembered, you know, I got family in this, and I just kind of got angry all over again that we've got people in this country who fawn and fart on themselves and behave like, and not least among them, the godforsaken for-profit media, who get all squishy over the royal baby. And see, now I did it. I'll give myself one more chance too. But I'm not talking about that qua that. I don't care if they call it Epaminondas Jones. I don't care. But the fact of the matter is, I kind of fall on the side of Mr. Jefferson and Mr. Franklin on this, in saying that, well, you know, pass. I'm not gonna get all over myself over the birth of an anachronism. I'm just not. I mean, I've been very, very busy the past couple of days, Jeremy. And no details, please. Are they still talking about it?
I haven't paid attention. I don't care. Good. I stopped caring when I heard they're going to have a baby. I really don't care.
Yeah, I sincerely don't give up.
I sincerely don't care. When I heard they're having a baby, great, that's wonderful. That's all I ever heard about it until we won't talk about it, because we're not going to talk about it anymore. That's how simple it is. But it's ironic you should mention Mr. Jefferson. I was watching the Smithsonian Channel last night, and I saw a piece that kind of caught my attention. I've heard of this in passing a couple times, but never clearly explained. Thomas Jefferson had his own Bible.
Yes.
Now,
oh, you didn't know that?
I didn't know that, but I find it uniquely interesting, because they mentioned how at the time he had 6,000 books of his own in his own personal collection, which probably rivaled every private or public library there was around at that time.
Well, you know that his book collection formed the central nucleus of what would become the Library of Congress, don't you?
Yes, yes, I knew that. But people said at the time, other than like your buggy, your Bible was your second biggest expenses, because books weren't easy to come by, and they took they're in very intensive manual labor, like 100 hours to make a Bible or even a normal book. But being Tom Jefferson, who he was at the time, he had adequate money. He went out and he bought 6 different copies of the Bible, 6 different languages, German, French, blah, 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 in his own personal English. He went through and methodically, they showed this pretty good. They have the Bible now. They're trying to restore it so they can put it on in the museum, the Smithsonian. And they showed how he put lines on the paper and cut and pasted from different parts of the Bible to totally and completely eliminate any miraculous thing in the Bible.
Yeah, he cut out all the hoodoo.
Right. In his Bible, he calls it the Life and Times of Jesus without the resurrection, without the magic fish story, without any of the other BS. And that was his way of a nod towards atheism. And in his time, that was a very dangerous thing to do. He could have been very easily branded a heretic for doing that if someone found out he did it.
Actually, Jeremy, it was easier for him to do that in his time than for someone to do it in ours. And I'm not kidding. I mean,
that's kind of sad.
Well, but it's also true. He was, you know, the phrase they used back then, he was a deist. That meant that he acknowledged some sort of higher power, but he had no idea what it was. That's why the Declaration of Independence says nature and nature's God. For all that means, that could be Dionysius running, chasing the nymphs through the woodlands.
Even though somehow that bled into the Pledge of Allegiance as one nation under God, not just whatever. So, yeah.
Well, no, that happens in the 1950s as a result of the great communism freakout. A campaign that was led by the Knights of Columbus, I believe, inserted under God into the Pledge of Allegiance in the 1950s. The Pledge of Allegiance was actually written by a Baptist minister from New England with, I think, Massachusetts, with socialist overtones, and it said one nation with liberty and justice for all.
That's could have stopped at that. That would have been fine.
Yeah, and whenever I'm in a situation where we have to say the pledge, I always drop the under God.
You know, I was I have to do something kind of I don't consider interesting. It's interesting to me, but when I'm in a formal gathering of people, like a graduation or something, when they do the pledge, I like to look around me, kind of just eyeball people and see who's putting their hand on their heart. I don't. I don't salute the flag. I don't do any of that because what we stand for and the things we do kind of turn my stomach. So I see no reason to pledge to that flag and that symbol for what it's done to all different people from this country and vastly around the world. But it's interesting to me because usually the older people, they're doing it. Most of the kids are. And once in a while, you'll see a middle-aged woman, just kind of standing like I do, not even lifting one of the words, and I just find that interesting.
Yeah, I was raised to do that, to participate, to hand over the heart and everything, and I guess it kind of stuck. But I understand why you do what you do, and it makes more sense than under God does, frankly.
As I've gotten older, the brainwashing that I do truly think does go on in society wears off when you hear the real facts behind it.
And yeah,
it does.
When
you wake up and realize what's going on in your name around the world, it kind of changes your mind about a lot of things that they don't want to tell you.
Well, and there's a ton of history out there that is either suppressed or simply not taught. Sure, without a doubt.
And I was uniquely interested in that Jefferson story just because of what happened in Texas last year with the school board. Because I say what happens in Texas school happens everywhere in the world, in the country eventually, because they're so powerful and such a big school system down there. How they voted to remove Thomas Jefferson from the school textbooks because he wasn't big enough and important person in history.
Yeah, but Phyllis
passed.
Right, yes, absolutely. By the way, another thing you can do, Lottie in the chat room noting, he says, in the pledge, I like to say underdog nice and loud and watch the reactions.
That's pretty funny, I'm sure, yeah. I mean, when I don't do it, people give me an evil stare or something. And I don't know if you've probably seen them too, but there's a ton of those pictures out on the interweb tubes of snapshots taken from Obama. Hardly ever is his hand over his heart in any of these pictures.
Oh, you know, they've criticized him for where he puts his hand. I remember seeing photographs of George W. Bush with his hand over his belly button. I kid you not.
That one shocked me. I mean, I remember, I forget what it was. It was a few weeks back when it was 2 weeks ago, because they had those pictures of GW the senior giving Obama those pair of socks, because now he's a comedian with socks, I guess. And I mentioned, then they dedicated the Sons Library a few months ago and gave him a humanitarian one. We talked about this earlier. And I asked all the questions, like, isn't this George W. did all these different things, blah, 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 blah. And there's one thing that's always, more than anything else, is more disturbing, even though it's a smaller thing in nature. On 60 Minutes, back about, I think it was 2009, or whenever the quake in Haiti was, the day after Christmas, when he and Clinton went down to Haiti to do their humanitarian, hey, look at me, I'm a big shot deal with them, and do nothing else, they're going around shaking hands. First, they showed GW walking in, the son, walking into the tent, shaking a little, we can only assume, kid of color's hand. That's what he would think of it, not what I think. He backs out. Clinton goes to walk in, and as he does, George W. pulls his shirt out of his back of his, Clinton's shirt out, and wipes his hands off with it.
Yes. Yeah.
And 60 Minutes caught that up and didn't edit it out. They didn't focus on it, but you definitely see it because it's done real quick. But I had to rewind it because we DVR'd at the time still. And I was in shock of that. That probably offended me more than a lot of things I've seen.
Wow. Yeah.
And even, like, shook his hands out like he was going to get the germs off before he wiped them off. It was like, ew, get this off of me.
Yeah, that's... Oh, God. I remember when I think it was Bill the Cat Killer Frist. You remember him?
Yes.
When the tsunami took place in Thailand and Indonesia, he went down there, and there was a little clip of audio, and the photographers, you could hear the cameras clicking away, and Cat Killer Bill can be heard to say, "Now y'all make sure and get some of the real good devastation in the background behind me, you hear?" Yeah.
That's pretty funny.
Yeah.
Well, before I let you go, yeah. I wanted to say, if Jim is out there, I hope he's doing okay. I know he was feeling ill a while ago. I haven't heard from him in a long time. It'd be nice to hear from him again soon.
Okay. All right. You take care.
You too. Thanks.
See you, Jeremy. Bye now.
Yeah, bye.
That's our buddy Jeremy calling from Vermont. Again, if you've never reached the program via Skype, all you have to do is send a contact request to Bob Kincaid Horn, BobKincaidHorn, and I'll clear it, and then we'll be good to go. Now, just to move into a couple of other stories. From the O Gag Me department, George Zimmerman has apparently turned his slaughter of Trayvon Martin into quite the profitable little enterprise. You know, first of all, his wife went and testified to the court, and, well, according to papers served on her by certain law enforcement personnel, it's alleged that she perjured herself, lying to the court about the ability they had to hire a lawyer when she was sitting on about $135,000 in donations that had come in to help Zim. You know, they came from Klansmen and racists and, you know, freedom protectors, right? Wolverines, right? She lied about that. Well, here in the last day or so, well, actually it was this past Tuesday, a check went in the mail. Not one of them great big golf tournament checks. This is just a humble little check. A check went in the mail to George Zimmerman. We had discussed this previously. The Buckeye Firearms Foundation had put out a hustle when it was announced that the evidence of the Trayvon Martin shooting was being had been asked to be continue to be held by the Justice Department. Buckeye Firearms Foundation put out a call for donations.
so they could buy them a new gun so he could get back out there and protect the freedom. Wolverines. Yeah. Well, a check went in the mail on Tuesday. A check. Now, and please, I mean, I've purchased firearms in the past. I know what they cost. You can get a darn fine shooting iron for $750. You can get a pretty dang good shooting iron for $500. And of course, since he was a community freedom protector and a community watching for freedom protector, he also had a flashlight and a knife, and he probably had a Red Ryder with a compass in the stock. And all of it was tooked away when he ended the universe for Trayvon Martin. So that all had to be replaced, all of his gear, his cop wannabe gear. So, yes, a check went in the mail on Tuesday addressed to George Zimmerman for the sum of $12,150.37. Really. And the Buckeye Firearms Freedom Protecting Foundation, they said, well, we've been cyber attacked since we started raising money for George Zimmerman to be able to go back to protecting freedom. They said their website was hacked. And at the time of this blog posting, apparently the website was not even reachable. So, but they managed to find the post office. 12,150 smackers. By God, he should be able to buy a zircon in chromium-plated, fully illuminated, genuine zircon-encrusted Glock for that kind of money. And a billion candle power Maglite that can also be used as a club to subdue, what do you call these assholes, right? Yeah. Who are always getting away with it until you kill them dead. Yeah, that's Florida. Then there's Missouri. Or as some people say, Missouri. It all depends on where you are in Missouri. And in Missouri, well, There's a river called the Merrimack River. It's a little stream, and it's just a peaceful, you know, not a whitewater rafting kind of, it's just a float trip. And a bunch of folks did what folks ordinarily, you know where this story's going, don't you? Dateline on the story is Steelville, Missouri. Bunch of friends and family got in their canoes or rafts or what have you for a float trip. Down the Merrimack River. And as quite often happens on a long float trip, you're drinking your pop, maybe your iced tea. I don't know, maybe somebody's drinking a little bit of the beer that made St. Louis famous. But these friends and family, they pulled up on a sandbar. And one of the folks wandered off into the woods to take a pee. Enter 59-year-old James Robert Crocker.
who came out to the sandbar and confronted the people who were on the sandbar. Said he was tired of having people traipsing all over his property. He was, of course, carrying his freedom protector. In this case, a 9mm pistol. 9mm semi-automatic pistol. And he began, Crocker began castigating the group, saying that they was a trespassing on his property. Steelville calls itself the floating capital of Missouri. Neighbor Herb Smelzer describes Crocker as courteous, hardworking, and territorial about his property. Jim put in a lot of hours and sweat fixing his access road to the river and had his property down there looking really nice, Smelzer said. And that's the situation when this group pulled up on the gravel sandbar. Gravel bar, sandbar, what have you. Crocker comes running down with his freedom protecting firearm to stand his ground. But he doesn't even get after the guy who went to take a leak. No, he comes up to the group. And as he begins screaming and yelling and hollering, he pulled up his 9mm pistol and he killed 48-year-old Paul Franklin Dart by shooting him in the face. Paul Franklin Dart was a member of the Carpenters Union. He'd been married to his wife, Loretta, for about 2 years. Interviewed by phone, she said, "I watched him be shot in the face and fall down. I watched my husband bleed to death. He was a wonderful man. He didn't deserve this." Crocker claims that he felt threatened because somebody was coming at him with rocks in their hands. Paul Franklin Dart, union carpenter, had no rocks in his hands. He had nothing in his hands. He wasn't the one who'd gone to take a leak. Merely standing there. And when Crocker was asked about it, he said, "Well, no, I just shot the one closest to me." Now, will this precipitate a nationwide discussion of the horrors of white-on-white violence? Because, you know, we've had to listen to that in excess of a week now, and it's become quite, frankly, sickening to listen to these yammering pudding brains of the for-profit media and the weird little talking points babblers that they bring on from the right wing. Well, you know, America has a terrible black-on-black violence problem. No black folks involved with this. I just shot the one closest to me. You know, I guess it was a diversion, what? Just shot the one closest to me. They charged Mr. Crocker with second-degree murder. He's in jail in lieu of $650,000 bond. I'm sure maybe the Buckeye Firearms Foundation may be able to put up, maybe they'll go his bail. Maybe the NRA will go his bail because he was clearly in the right. It was his property. You see what happens when we value property over people? Fucking punks always get away with it. This float trip was organized by the rafting company. They rent canoes. And yes, some of them were drinking. This particular group had been going down the Merrimack River for about 5 years. And Paul Wilkerson owns the rafting company. He said, well, they're a real nice group of people. We never had any trouble or complaints regarding them. Loretta Dart, the wife of the man that just happened to be closest to freedom protecting awful gun owner. You know, he went from off. How long does it take to squeeze a trigger? That's the amount of time it takes to go from lawful gun owner to awful gun owner. That's how long it takes to drop an L. She said, Loretta Dart said they weren't at the gravel bar before much, for very long at all, when Crocker came out and carrying a gun. He said, y'all are on private property, get out. And then he waved the gun around and he fired it in the air and then he shot it into the ground near Paul Dart and her cousin. And then he looked at another member of the group and said, I have the power here. I have the power. Loretta Dart said, my husband tried to calm the guy down. He went to the guy's arm to try to stop him, but the guy jerked back and popped him in the face. Mrs. Smelzer, the neighbor, came out and saw Crocker with the right half of his face, neck, and torso splattered with blood. She thought he'd been hurt. He said, no, I just shot a guy down the river. This is his blood. You better call 911. Police looked in his Ford Mustang, and that's where they found the gun that was used to kill Mr. Dart, who just happened to be the one who was standing near. No, I just shot the one closest to me. Is this the part? Well, you know, thank God we're having problems with, we've been having these, once in a while it's handy that it comes up with, that we come up with these audio problems, because this is the point in time where I'd probably otherwise have to cue up Lee Greenwood singing, God bless the USA. Yeah, I know, I know. No, he didn't, no, the Paul Dart didn't have any Skittles, didn't have any iced tea. But by golly, by jingo, if only they'd had a freedom-protecting gun of their own, right? This is the freedomest free country in the world. man, get this is at STL Today is where you'll find it. And, oh, my God, get a load of the shooter, Crocker. You will so not be okay. Here's our freedom protector. He had posted it with a sign that said, keep out. And you know what? I guess it, using better judgment, you probably do keep out. But that's the problem with being in a canoe. If you're in a canoe with four people and three of them say we're stopping and the fourth one says, well, I don't think we should, guess what? You're stopping. Big, broad, gravelly, kind of beachy area. Yeah. But he was tired of all the traipsing. He was tired of seeing people traipse. And so you go, and he's been charged, by the way, with second degree murder. Why not first degree? You know what? If you can form the intent to go and get your freedom protecting gun out of your Ford Mustang and go stomping all the way down, you know, second degree murder is what's called hot blooded murder. It's murder in the heat of passion. Why is this guy not facing murder in the first degree? Right? Because he clearly formed the intent when he got the gun. When you go get the gun, you are manifesting some level of intent, are you not? So why was he not charged with first-degree cold-blooded murder? Murder, you know, first-degree murder is premeditated murder. You know what? When you pull the trigger and you shoot the gun in the air, and then you shoot in the ground at the feet of the guy that you will then raise the pistol and shoot in the face, that's premeditated murder. Anybody want to bet? Does anyone doubt that this guy will raise the issue of stand your ground? Missouri's bound to have one. Missouri is absolutely awash in right-wingery. Marty noting, hey, maybe this guy can get O'Mara and West to be his lawyers and put the victim on trial again. Jack in Shreveport noting, Dr. Bill said something recently about property versus people from Locke's second treatise. One point he made was that part of what Locke said is left out by conservatives. I'm paraphrasing. The main point Dr. Bill made was that Locke defined charity as basically the opposite of what we think it is these days. Charity, to Locke, was something that was part of the community, not to be begged for, but what was owed by everyone to everyone who needed it. I know exactly what you're talking about, Jack, and you've got it pretty well spot on. Pretty well spot on. So there's that. And then of course, there is Juror B-29. Well, we'll talk about Juror B-29 here in a couple of minutes. Let's go to the phones. Apparently, we have Jay.
Yes, John in D.C.
Oh, hey, John. Oh, okay.
Yeah, I guess your phones are down, right?
The whole system is apparently down back at the studio at the mansion.
All right. Yeah, I think the I don't Because did you see this guy, this he's like this rabid chief or something over in Pennsylvania?
Yeah.
I mean, it's along the same lines as the Kokesh dude. You know, it's these people that probably have severe Napoleon complexes, Napoleonic complexes, thinking that that gives them the right to, you know, use firearms on innocent civilians.
Right. What did he say? F all you libtards out there. You take it in the...
Yeah. Yeah, like, what is he, like, 12?
I mean, this guy makes videos.
Right.
Saying this stuff. Yeah, this is Gilberton, Pennsylvania Police Chief Mark Kessler.
Yeah.
And he makes videos of himself firing various automatic weapons, according to the story. And he hollers out the obscenities at the libtards.
Right. Yeah, I mean, it makes you wonder what percentage of police are really just dumb football players that couldn't get through a real college course. I mean, it reminds me of that guy. Who was the guy that, the guy with the, he had the funny, weird goatee and the googly eyes.
Oh.
He was some sort of firearms expert, and he had, like, a security company. And he got on YouTube or something like that. This was a little bit ago. But then he was talking about how he was going to take his militia and everyone should run for the hills. And remember that guy?
Yeah.
And then they were all like, okay, well, now you can't have anything. You can't have your firearms permit. You can't have anything. If you're going to do something this stupid with that kind of equipment, we're not going to let you do anything.
Yeah, so. this guy doesn't need to possess firearms, and apparently neither did... Neither did this cat in Steelville, Missouri.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I mean, the standards are pretty low. They're not, I don't even understand how people don't expect, you know, people in other countries with relative civilization to look at us and say, you know, what a bunch of dumb knuckle-dragging idiots. Like, why do they let people like this use or get anywhere near guns? I mean, how is this guy even a freaking police chief, you know, let alone a functioning member of law enforcement?
This guy has about as much business with firearms. And of course, he kind of doubled down when they asked him about this a couple of days ago, John. He said, I think the video, and remember, I was just mentioning, it was Rick Smith who taught me this. He said, always understand that Pennsylvania is Pittsburgh in the west and Philly in the east and Alabama in the middle.
Yeah, right.
Oh, this is that. somebody got to him from the Pottsville Republican Herald, Morning Glory Express, Battle Cry of Freedom and Moral Volcano newspaper, and asked him about the videos, and he said, I think the video's in support of the Constitution, the support of the First Amendment, the right to express... See, I'm making him a redneck, aren't I? The right to express your thoughts and words freely without reprisal from any government.
Yeah.
They're just trying to make a mountain out of molehill.
Yeah, but if you look at it from, like, the most logical standpoint you could, which he obviously isn't, the guy's wearing a Confederate flag T-shirt, which automatically says... I only represent a certain segment of the population.
Well, now you're off into a different story out of Arizona. Did you catch this one?
No.
By the way, Jeremy's shooting you a note. He says, John's right on, clapping this as I type this between laughter and tears. So, yeah. No, out in Arizona, they had at some high school out there, they had Redneck Day. And you know, when you have redneck now granted, the right wing, you know, there's some high schools where they have like a gender bending day, you know, it's like tacky day or something when you're playing the arch rival in football and all the guys show up as drag and the girls dress as the guys, and the right wing gets real upset about that because, you know, it says there in Deuteronomy that a woman shall not put on the raiment of a man, nor shall a man put on the raiment of the woman, lest they be taken outside the gates and stoned real good. And we ain't talking about nobody smoking nothing neither.
Right.
It says something like that. They'll get so upset about Redneck Day. Redneck Day, no, it turns out that you just, well, for Redneck Day, you just show up, I guess about half of them just normally, but this one youngin showed up wearing a Confederate battle flag as a cape.
Jeez.
The U.S. Department of Education is going to investigate it. But they've also said, but listen, we're not going to investigate the Confederate flag part of the issue because then we'd have to put up with death threats from right-wingers and Confederates. And no, they didn't say that part. They just said the investigation would not include the Confederate flag display, that the scope would be limited to whether a racially hostile environment was created due to language and actions that were not protected by the First Amendment.
Yeah, I mean, that's pretty clever lawyer speak. That's good.
One of the folks, the Reverend Jarrett Maupin, wrote a letter saying, while I'm glad they're investigating, the letter itself is a permission slip for racist parents to send their children to school wearing any symbol they want. To me, there's no difference between a Confederate flag and a swastika flag. Is the Department of Education saying it's okay for a young neo-Nazi to wear a swastika flag?
Yeah.
Because, see, remember, young women have been sent home for wearing T-shirts relating to the right to choose. And others have been sent home for wearing T-shirts that declared, you know, their non-adherence to religion. They were sent home because that is a distraction to the learning experience. On the other hand, if young Kleagle Nosefinger here from the junior auxiliary, the Klan junior auxiliary, decides to wear a Confederate battle flag for a cape, well, that's just fine.
Yeah.
Freedom, right?
Yeah, I just don't, I mean, do they realize that they lost the war?
Well, I'm not so sure anymore that they did.
I mean, think that...
There were no consequences. There were no consequences. Yeah. Lee, Longstreet, the treasonous generals, not one of them got their neck stretched. Oh, sure, yeah. Commit treason, no big deal. You know, yeah, Bobby, why don't you just go and be president of a university for a little while, right?
Jesus.
Yeah.
Yeah, I just don't, it's like, I mean, that whole, like, you know, we're a pretty fairly advanced country. We have a lot of advantages, you know, even other civilized countries don't, and I use civilization loosely, you know, considering the... all the policies that are enacted in some of these countries. Anyway, how can we be such an advanced country and yet we still have like half the country stuck in, you know, Dixieland?
That's what this coming country is coming to more and more and more and more, is that it is a bifurcated, trifurcated, quadrifurcated, or whatever. We are what I have called a plessyized nation, where, you know, if you happen to be born in Alabama, you're screwed if you get sick. On the other hand, if you happen to be born in California or New York or a more enlightened state with the Medicaid expansion, well, you can go to the doctor.
Yeah.
And it's just a matter of the accident of the geography of your birth that consigns you to a grim and miserable death or a life, a hopeful life.
Yeah, and I'd even say, because I've met plenty of people, you know, I know plenty of people from Virginia and some of these states that you wouldn't even think had a large literate population who are, you know, extremely progressive, extremely... you know, they're people that are in the 21st century. And so I don't understand how they even get along in states like that where, you know, a large part of the population still thinks that the stars and bars have any sort of political influence. I mean, what was that? Wasn't there like just, man, this must have been like no more than 3 or 4 years ago where they had a, they actually did the Paula Deen slave theme party at some, like a governor's mansion or something like that.
Oh God, there's one of those every year. It seems like it's constantly popping up somewhere, because people are just clueless, and some folks are just Klansmen.
All right. I mean, that's another thing too with the. I don't know what you said. You weren't talking about Snowden and one other topic. What was the other topic?
Oh,
the royal baby.
Okay. Well, I mean, I just thought that with the whole Trayvon Martin thing, that it's like people kept calling in, you know, and people were making all these comments, and it seems to me as though one of the underlying issues is not just, you know, the fact that the prosecutors were idiots, but the fact that we constantly seem to be running into these completely either sexist or racist or just plain corrupt cops that don't seem to be fit for the job, but I guess they're there because no one else wants to do it. You know, and that seems to be a theme that no one really wants to touch on, but it does seem like a very common denominator.
Yeah, it's sort of hard to avoid. But the one that's out there driving me crazy right now, and I mentioned it just before, I brought up your phone call. I gotta make them hush.
Remember, BYOL, bring your own lettuce.
Yeah, that drives me crazy. I'll be back to you in just a second. As soon as this woman shuts up. I'll be glad when we get... Well, no, we're never going to have it, are we? Sorry about that, John.
That's all right.
But now we've got them quieted down. No, this one story coming out of ABC is just horrifying. And it's, there was one person of color, minority, whatever word you want to use, on the Zimmerman jury. Juror B-29. And she told ABC's Good Morning America that basically George Zimmerman, and this is a quote from her, got away with murder. But then she goes on to say some really stupid stuff.
Right.
She was a nursing assistant and a mother of 8 children. I would never, well, I don't know. You get somebody like that with a little bit of medical type healthcare training, and they suddenly assume a certain degree of
intelligence.
Well, expertise that they don't have.
Right.
She said in this particular case, she said that the case wasn't about race to her. She said George Zimmerman got away with murder, but you can't get away from God. Well, I mean, really, really? Yes, you can. Especially if he's imaginary. And at the end of the day, he's going to have a lot of questions and answers he has to deal with, but the law couldn't prove it. Horse pucky. Right?
Yeah.
Right? But she said, I was the juror that was going to give them a hung jury. I fought to the end. And then, of course, she caved.
Yeah.
She said, this is where I felt confused, where if a person kills someone, then you get charged for it. But as the law was read to me, if you have no proof that he killed him intentionally, you can't say he's guilty. Well, he did kill him intentionally.
What does she think? He just accidentally happened to have a gun?
Right, that the gun just went off? That's why I say, John, that you never know what a jury's going to think about. I mean,
right.
One of them may break a shoelace and send somebody up for life.
I think the difference here is that we're talking about Floridians, and the moment Floridians come into the conversation, you immediately have to dispel any presumptions you may have had, you know, concerning logic or common sense.
Yeah.
I mean, that, like, what the fuck? I mean, by that standard, she would let all murderers go because, you know, eventually Satan will deal with them. Yeah, that's basically what she's saying. She's saying, it's horrible and it's such a bad thing, but Lucifer will get him eventually.
Yeah, Sandra said something hilarious to me in a chat the other day, or in a tweet the other day. She said she hears people saying, well, when they're getting ready to say something really nasty, they'll say, well, Satan's been so busy in my life. Because, you know, that's what the Fundies say, the really emotional megachurch. Jesus has been at work in my life.
Right.
Right.
They forget the whole, it's almost like, you know, you pretend to prescribe to a religion, and then you only include the parts that are convenient at the time. You know, I know it mentions in the Bible, you know, free choice or free, you know, freedom of choice. But for some reason, you know, if Satan just happens to be there, you know, freedom of choice goes right out the door. Then they're just helpless idiots.
You got 17, the house got 16. You're going to hit or stand. There's Satan right there, blackjack dealer. But no, the thing about the B-29 juror that drives me the craziest is this quote. She said, "It's hard for me to sleep. It's hard for me to eat because I feel I was forcefully included in Trayvon Martin's death." You know, because she was asked to serve jury duty.
All right.
And as I carry him on my back, I'm hurting as much as Trayvon Martin's mother, because there's no way any mother should feel that pain. No, she's not. She is not hurting as much as Trayvon's mama. There is no way she can hurt as much as Trayvon's mama. And the fact that she is willing to say that she's hurting as much as Trayvon's mama means she ain't.
Right. Yeah, but that's like these people that were all like...
If you're on Good Morning America talking about this, you're not hurting as much as Trayvon's mama, okay? Can we just be clear about that?
Yeah. Well, I mean, just the fact that, you know, she's like, oh, I could have, you know, stopped the jury, but I didn't.
Right.
Right there tells you that, you know, I mean, this is like these people that are all like, oh, well, he was 17, so he really wasn't a kid. You know, unless it's their kid in that predicament, they really have no right to tell this woman whether or not her own kid was a kid or not. So, I mean, that's total hypocrisy and total, like, almost psychotic apathy to say something like that. You know, that's like walking up to someone who's mourning the loss of someone in an accident and asking them if they want to buy real estate. You know, it's like, listen, this person's obviously grieved. Why would you make such a stupid comment? So.
Yeah. Yeah, it's tough to stomach, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, well, I mean, it's not just that. It's that it happens so frequently. I mean, you look in, like, the news or, I mean, there are plenty of websites like this, but there's got to be at least one. I mean, usually it plays like this. It's either a sexist cop or a racist cop, one of the two, or someone who's short on funds and needed to take a bribe. And it's almost like, I don't know if it's the prevalence of media or what, but it seems like there's got to be like four or five stories a week like that.
Yeah, if not more. Right. Exactly. Well, John, it's awful good to hear from you, and hopefully we'll talk again when I get back to the mansion.
I'll definitely call soon. Thank you.
All right. See you. Bye now. That's John calling from D.C. Little break real quick, if that's okay, and we'll come back and wrap up the program for the evening. This is The Horn. We will go to silence because I don't want to run the risk of losing the ability to take Skype calls. We'll go to silence for a couple of minutes and then be right back. I'm Bob Kincaid. This is The Horn. And, yeah, we've still got one tin of the Palmans, the lightly salted, gently roasted, blanched, peeled almonds made by Paul from Parts Unknown that are out there for the available for a contribution of $40 or more. We are in a hole that's about $850 deep right now. Jude filled in a little bit of the bottom of the hole, and we sure do appreciate that. And if you'd like to have one of these tins, just let me know. Shoot me your email, or not your email, but your traditional real mail address, and Paul from Parts Unknown will get that right out there to you. So awesome. And you know, if you don't have $40, if you got 10, that helps too, because I'm anxious to get back into the swing of things in the studio back at the mansion after 2 weeks away from home. But when we get in $850 holes, God only knows what will happen by Monday. So you see what I'm getting at. Thanks very much. Like I said, we'll go silent for just a couple of minutes and be right back. This is Conversation Radio. This is The Horn. I'm Bob Kincaid. And so we're back at it. It is 24 minutes past the hour on this Friday on the front porch on The Horn. I'm Bob, of course. If you want to get involved, if you want to take part in the conversation, the Skype line is open. Bob Kincaid Horn is the contact there. Got a note in just a couple of minutes ago from Kate on the Front Range. She says, when I hear about all the, and Kate, by the way, has the soul of a DJ. She really does. Things just, you know, come to her. Let's see. All right, let's see here. I hope I've got it. I thought I did. There he is. Yeah, Kate has the soul of a DJ, and she wrote, when I hear about all the ignorance in the South, I can't help but think of Phil Harris as that's what I love about the South. Can you please slot it in before you sign off? There's so much to love about Dixie. It makes my mouth water to ponder it all, and my heart yearn for the smell of magnolia blossoms. There's a lot to love and a lot to loathe. Safe trip going home, Kate says. It's hot here in Montana, but no rain, no forest fires yet, no snow on the horizon. Keep looking up. Indeed, indeed. So, yeah, I can do that. It fits rather nicely. Here it is. It's a little short thing. A classic.
Won't you come with me to Alabama? Let's go see my dear old mammy. She's frying eggs and broiling hammy. That's what I like about the South. Now there you can make no mistake. Where those nerves are never shaky. Ought to taste a layer cakey. That's what I like about the South. She's got baked ribs and candied yams. Those sugar-cured Virginia hams. Basement full of those berry jams. And that's what I like about the South. Hot corn bread and black-eyed peas. You can eat as much as you please. Cause it's never out of season. That's what I like about the South. Don't take one. Have two, they're dark brown and chocolate too. Suits me, they must suit you, cause that's what I like about the South. Away, way down where the cane grows tall, down where they say you all walk on in with that southern drawl, cause that's what I like about the South. It's down where they have those pretty queens, keep a dreaming those dreamy dreams. Well, let's sip that absinthe in New Orleans. That's what I like about the South. Come old Bob with all the news. Got the box back coat and the button shoes. But he's all caught up with his union dues. And that's what I like about the South. Here come old Roy down the street. Who, can't you hear those scuffling feet? He would rather sleep than eat. And that's what I like about the South. Every time I pass your door, you act like you don't want me no more. Why don't you shake your head and sigh, and I'll go walking right on by. Gone on and on and on. Honey, when you tell me that you love me, then how come you close your eyes? Did I tell you about the place called Do I Diddy? It ain't no town and it ain't no city. It's just awful small, but awful pretty will do I Diddy. Didn't come here to criticize. I'm not here to sympathize. But don't call me those no good lies, cause a lying gal I do despise. You love me like I love you. Send me 50 PDQ. Rose are red and violets are pink. I'm gonna get old 50, I don't think. She's got backbones and butter beans, ham hocks and turnip greens. You and me in New Orleans. And that's what I like about the South.
the incomparable Phil Harris. That's what I like about the South. Here comes Bob, got all the news. I didn't. Yeah. So, good idea, Kate. Thanks a lot. And thanks, Jeremy, for kicking in and helping this evening. We really do appreciate it. It's much appreciated indeed. The evening's goal just got under $100 down to the $95 line. Thanks a lot. We really, really do appreciate it. There's nothing quite like having a police chief. Nothing quite like having a police chief who wants to shoot libtards. Don't you just love that? Isn't that just charming? Don't you love the idea of sending your precious lumpkin to school down to the, what's the name of the school? Queen Creek High School. You send your precious lumpkin to Queen Creek High School, and here comes a little Kleagle wannabe, a little Grand Wizard wannabe, running around in his Confederate cape. Yeah. So, yeah, there's that. And ever so much more. Where'd it go? Lord God. what's his name? Castro, reached a deal whereby he won't get the death penalty for the horrors up in Cleveland. And then lo and behold, here it comes today. Got this via Isaac. A missing Los Angeles teenager was sexually assaulted, kept in a metal box, and forced to process marijuana for her two captors, according to a federal criminal complaint filed this week. Prosecutors said the girl was held by Ryan Belletto, age 30, and Patrick Pearmain, age 24, who are charged with conspiracy to distribute marijuana using a minor in a drug operation and possession of a firearm in furtherance of drug trafficking. Is this the point where we point out, this is the kind of conduct you get out of a prohibition situation? Yeah. Police arrested the two men. They found a bag full of marijuana, prescription drugs, condoms, and a pregnancy test. Pearmain also had a notebook on him that had an apparent script for the girl to read to police over the phone, authorities claim. The girl told authorities she was having consensual sex with both men, which officials noted is not legally possible given the fact that she was, underage. Lord of mercy. Authorities said they also found a poem signed by the girl describing her life in the box. The girl referred to the rural property as the farm. The metal box had holes in it. Spray painted on the outside was the first initial of the teenage girl's name, and inside was a decal that depicted an animal skull surrounding the shadow image of a human skull with the logo Bone Collector. Mercy sakes. The two face 10 years to life in prison, but have yet to be charged in the alleged abuse of the teen. Mind-blowing. Just mind-blowing. And, from an update from inside the high-flying world of finance, a lawsuit has been filed by former employees of Merrill Lynch suing the company. The women were told that they were instructed to read a book during as they were being trained to work for Merrill Lynch. They were instructed to read a book called Seducing the Boys Club, Uncensored Tactics from a Woman at the Top. They were told to emulate its advice. And here's the advice that they were told to emulate. You gotta love these big banks. I play on men's masculine pride and natural instincts to protect the weaker sex. Unless he is morbidly obese, there is no man on earth who won't puff up at this sentence. Wow, you look great. Been working out? And then there's another story. So she stocked her mini fridge with beer along with her designer water. She kept a big bowl of candy on her desk. She brought in games like Boggle and Checkers. Pretty soon the boys were hanging out in her office. And when they discussed things of business interest, Maggie was right there with them. According to the news story, the women were also pressured to attend gals-only events on topics like dressing for success, preparing healthy meals while working full-time. The women were told to be perky or bubbly. And when one woman tried to bring in a client, the boss manager told her to stick to your knitting. But we're looking forward and not back, right? Right. Yeah. It's just useful once in a while to be reminded that the war on women isn't just being waged in places like North Carolina Stand and Texas Stand. Texas Stand. No. It's pervasive. And then Steve King. You know, it was a couple of nights ago when we were talking about his remarks about, well, it was the same night that we talked about what Louis Gohmert comparing human beings who had their civil rights violated to snail darters and other insects. Yeah, it's kind of a double stupid. Well, that was the same evening we were talking about Steve King of Iowa, who declared that 130-pound Mexicans have calves like cantaloupes from carrying 75-pound bales of the marijuana through the desert. Well, he has been criticized. He's even been criticized by the orange one. Eric Cantor was disgusted, he claimed. Well, they had to be. I don't mean that any normal person would be. Any normal person would. No, but they had to be disgusted because, well, politics. Boner said, I find his comments hateful and ignorant. Right? Yeah. So, lo and behold, Steve King doubles down. Oh, please, God of the mixer desk, let this audio play.
And there are a couple of points with this, too, though. That actually, just for the point of public information, that description comes from many days down on the border, riding and sitting with the Border Patrol and without them. At night, no night vision, watching the shadows come across the border.
Okay, wait. Do we have this correct? Stand by. What? Steve King has gone down night riding with the Border Patrol, and sometimes he did it by himself, and he watches them without night vision. Did you catch that? Without night vision, and he sees their calves that are like cantaloupes. Okay, keep going, Steve. Keep digging.
People up personally with my hands unloading illegal drugs out of a vehicle with a false bottom under the truck.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, this is a personal experience, and I sit there at night. Border Patrol agents will come to me one at a time in their civilian clothes and talk to me clandestinely, and they don't want any names, location, or dates. They want me to know what's going on down there.
Right.
This description is a prescription from that kind of experience.
And so they all have calves the size of cantaloupes. I mean, again, that's beside the point. But the calves the size of cantaloupes, I mean, they're all...
By the way, the one asking the questions is the perennially obnoxious Laura Ingraham.
What?
I insulted the illegal drug dealers, didn't I? The drug smugglers? I insulted them. I admit that.
Okay.
I don't know why anybody else would be insulted because I insulted that universe
of
people.
It's just predictable how this all played out. That's all.
Yeah, it's predictable because when you say that for every one high school valedictorian dreamer, there are 100 130-pound Mexicans with calves like cantaloupes. Yeah, that's just as yeah, that has nothing to do with insulting an entire group of people, right? Yeah. Jesus Christ.
I'm saying, and during, probably, it's probably, Congressman, if you said these things a year ago, not during this debate, or maybe not during this, let's say just an off year where we weren't talking about immigration reform, right? Then this wouldn't have even made a story. But Boehner feels like he has to come out and condemn you. And he wants you to apologize. Clearly he wants you to apologize to try to clean the Republican Party from the Steve King verbal sin on this. So I'm asking you today, will you apologize for this comment?
No, I won't do that, Laura. If I did that, that would further marginalize.
No, Laura, I'm not going to do that. I've got money rolling in from teabaggers and racists and bigots. We can't count it as fast as it's coming in there, Laura. So... No, I'm not going to apologize. It's good for business, Laura. Don't you understand? It's good for business. Yeah. I saw a story today where I can't remember which one it is. A Republican said that he... who was it? I can't remember. Said publicly that the idea of shutting down the government in order to defund Obamacare was stupid, which, incidentally, it is. Whosever office it was, we were in there, and the phone was ringing off the hook with angry teabagging, Taliban equivalent Americans, angry teabagging voters calling in to tell, I'm upset with him. We got to defund that communist Kenyan socialist Muslim deep-seated hatred of white people, Obamacare, before America is destroyed forever. Yeah. The reality. I mean, I heard the person answering the phone, 5-6 times in the space of 15 minutes sitting there waiting for my meeting. I 5 or 6 times. Well, yes, no, that's not, well, please. It was a conversation that consisted entirely of broken syllables. But you knew that's what they were calling about. No, Steve King's not going to apologize. And you know what? Steve King knows that he knows that John Boehner's not going to do anything to him. Actions have no consequences. There are no repercussions for his behavior. He's not going to be pulled from any committee assignments. He's not going to be taken away from any plum leadership positions. Because understand something, the Taliban equivalent Americans, the Tea Party, own the Republican Party. Now, I've never been a fan of the Republican Party. I've never been a member of the Republican Party, but I can at least acknowledge some realities that this country has often functioned when Democrats and Republicans could find some sort of common ground and go forward from there. Usually it winds up being something that is less than what we would want and, watered down. But things move forward. It can't anymore. The Republican Party is owned by the Tea Party. The Republican Party lives in mortal terror of the Tea Party, the teabaggers, the Taliban equivalent Americans. And they see no way free of them. There are actually people who would like to get some work done, But if they are seen to be collaborating with the Democrats, well, it's game over. They'll wind up having to take some have to take some crappy-ass $400,000-a-year lobbying job in Washington, D.C., and they won't be Congress critters anymore. And while the money's better, the fact of the matter is, if you have expended the energy necessary to run for Congress, you want to be there for a while. Because power and access to power are an aphrodisiac. I had a note from Darlene earlier today. Subject line was Empire. She said, Bob, did you catch this on Alternet? Pretty frightening and repugnant. And it's an article at Alternet by Max Blumenthal. Shocking extermination fantasies by the people running America's empire on full display at Aspen Summit. Seated on a stool before an audience packed with spooks, lawmakers, lawyers, and mercenaries, CNN's Wolf Blitzer introduced recently retired CENTCOM chief General James Mattis. I've worked with him, and I've worked with his predecessors, Blitzer said of Mattis. I know how hard it is to run an operation like this. Reminding the crowd that CENTCOM is really, really important, Blitzer urged them to celebrate Mattis. Mattis, let's give the general a round of applause. Following the gales of cheering that resounded from the room, Mattis, the gruff 40-year Marine veteran who once volunteered his opinion that it's fun to shoot some people, outlined the challenge ahead. The war on terror that began on 9/11, see, pay attention. The war on terror that began on September 11th has no discernible end, he said, liken it to the constant skirmishing between the U.S. cavalry and the Indians during the genocidal Indian, and that's the end of the quote, the constant skirmishing between the U.S. cavalry and the Indians, unquote, as Max Blumenthal notes, during the genocidal Indian wars of the 19th century. The skirmishing will likely go on for a generation. Got that? He just compared Native Americans who were having their land stolen from them to religiously insane people who like to cut away at the genitals of little girls to make sure that they can never enjoy sex. And they do so in the name of, you know, their religion. Go figure. Now, that is not a generalization about Islam. And frankly, there may be parallels there that don't that do exist. For instance, once again, the American military trying to impose its will on native peoples in lands that do not belong to the American military or the American people. So maybe it's more accurate than I thought. But Max Blumenthal observes, Mattis's remarks made beside a cable news personality who acted more like a sidekick than a journalist set the tone for the entire 2013 Aspen Security Forum. A project of the Aspen Institute, the Security Forum, brought together the key figures behind America's vast national security state, from military chieftains like Mattis to embattled National Security Agency Chief General Keith Alexander to top FBI and CIA officials, along with the bookish functionaries attempting to establish legal groundwork for expanding the war on terror. Max Blumenthal continues, none of the high-flying reporters junketed to Aspen to act as interlocutors seemed terribly interested in interrogating the logic of the war on terror. The spectacle was a perfect window, and see, this is why I was reminded. I just said power and access profound aphrodisiacs. Max Blumenthal says, the spectacle was a perfect window into the world of access journalism, with media professionals brown-nosing national security elites committed to secrecy and surveillance and avoiding overly adversarial questions. Jeff Harris, the communications director for the Aspen Institute, did not respond to questions from Mr. Blumenthal submitted about whether the journalists who participated in the security forum accepted fees. It is likely that all relied on Aspen to at least cover lodging and travel costs. CNN sponsored the forum through a special new website called CNN Security Clearance, promoting the event through Twitter and specially commissioned op-eds from participating national security figures like former CIA Director John McLaughlin. Another forum sponsor was Academy, the private mercenary corporation formerly known as Blackwater. Academy is what they, not with a Y, but an I on the end, is what they renamed Blackwater after they renamed Blackwater ZXE. Next, they'll use some Egyptian hieroglyphic symbol, as long as it's not the one Prince used. The Aspen Institute did not respond to Blumenthal's questions about whether accepting sponsorship from such an unsavory entity fit within its ethical guidelines. Crisco John Ashcroft was there, the man who was terrified of calico cats and made sure to put a drape over the naked demonic breast of the aluminum justice statue over at the DOJ. Yeah, that John Ashcroft, he was there. Oh, my God, what? Responding to a question about U.S. over-reliance on the kinetic approach of drone strikes and special forces, Ashcroft reminded the audience that the U.S. also likes to torture terror suspects, not just exterminate them. Here's the quote. It's not true that we have relied solely on the kinetic option. We wouldn't have so many detainees if we'd relied on the ability to exterminate people. We've had a blended and nuanced approach, and for the guy who's on the other end of a hellfire missile, he doesn't see that as nuance. And that is when the room exploded into laughter. Oh, 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 that's a real niece. That John Ash, oh, he's a funny one, John Ashcroft is. Oh, by the way, I mentioned the naked breast of the justice statue here in D.C. Well, Ken Cuccinelli in the Old Dominion, Virginia, has one-upped John Ashcroft. He has insisted that a drape be draped across the female symbol of the Commonwealth of Virginia, because she too had some of that exposed breastus. Because, you know, Cuccinelli was afraid that, well, who knows, Jesus might be offended. O.F. Good God. Access. Man, it's everything, isn't it? That's why you'll probably never hear General Alexander or 32nd Noble Turk Mike whatever on this program. I don't have... No, I'm not willing to... No. And now we go off to Russia, land of freedom, where there is an organization now formed called Occupy Pedophilia, P-E-D-O-F-I-L-Y-A-Y. These are proto-fascists, neo-Nazis. And they place ads in newspapers, personal ads. And they are seeking teenaged LGBT youth. When one responds, they set up a meeting. And then they torture the teenager after kidnapping him. And then they roll the video showing how they've tortured them, and make them come out to friends and family on camera. European LGBT news service Pink News reported today, gay victims aged 12 to 16 are reportedly lured in by the group led by Maxim Marcinkevich, known under the nickname Cleaver. I'm looking at an image right now. of a young man whose face is blanked out, being held down by two men. They're all dressed in, the two men are dressed in black. The boy, the teenage boy, is holding a sex toy and has had apparently, like, I don't know, lipstick rubbed on his nipples. Spectrum Human Rights Alliance says, these self-proclaimed crime fighters perform their actions under the broad daylight, often outside and clearly visible to general public that indifferently passes by or even commends them. Video recordings of bullying and tortures are freely distributed on the internet in order to out LGBT teens to their respective schools, parents, and friends. Many victims were driven to suicides. The rest are deeply traumatized. Meanwhile, the Russian government has gotten busy. They passed a law forbidding anyone from equating gay and straight relationships. The country's highest court also upheld a ban on pride parades in Moscow that forbids LGBT activists from marching for 100 years. Well, I think I just found where Tony Perkins and the American Family Association and the rest of those goons need to move. This sounds like they'll be happy as can be. Can I just ask a question? Did this crap go on during the Soviet Union? When the Soviet Union was the governing, when under the dreaded communism, was this stuff still going on? And I'm not asking rhetorically. I don't know the answer to that question. But it is obvious that Russia under Putin has become an absolute hellhole for anybody who isn't a nasty little fascist. Thank you, Kate. Kate kicked in, and we find ourselves, as far as the evening's fundraising is concerned, we find ourselves now at $55 to go. So thank you very kindly, Kate. And thank you, Jude. And thank you, Jeremy. And thank you for the challenge out there. Remember, well, Kate, you are eligible now for the second tin of almonds, and you'll love them, too, and they're good and good for you. So I just need a mailing address, please. And thanks again to Paul from Parts Unknown for getting that ball rolling with these delicious little snack treat. Palmons, as I like to say them. All we ask is one can a day. Palmons. So everybody have a wonderful weekend. I look forward to being talking to you from the mansion come Monday. Thanks a lot. Have a wonderful weekend. Take care. I don't know if I've got audio or not, so let's see. And just thank you again to our all-volunteer staff, Lottie and Sparky and Texas Betsy in the chat room. Thank you to our news ninjas, Gene and Susan. Thank you to John Fox for all of his technical help. In Australia. Thank you to Ben Birch for all that he has done, not just for the horn, but for progressive radio in general. You know, he kind of saved it, right, by putting the White Rose Society together. And thanks, of course, go out to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net, and acact.org. The work will continue here in D.C. My colleague Bo is staying here next week. And I urge you and encourage you to call your senators, tell them you want to see the AIC Act introduced in the Senate of the United States. And always, 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 Gina, Judy, it's all for you.